You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
7 minutes after 10, does God exist? Give us a call and answer that one. 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg. And in Cape Town, of course, you can give us a call on the number 021-446-0567. I'm joined by a couple of folks during this hour as well. Firstly, on the line, you know, let's put on Mashlatse Mashua, who is a God-loving interlocutor. Welcome to the show, Mashlatse.
Thank you so much. Cheers, Eusebius. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I was going to sing your praises, being one of your fans, but you asked me not to. He's a very clever person, I'll just say that. And in our Cape Town studios, talking of more clever people, we have atheist Jacques Rousseau. How's it, Jacques?
Morning, Eusebius. All good this side, thank you.
And, of course, in your talk show host, you have the most rational person, the agnostic in Eusebius McKaiser. Mashlatse. Does God exist?
I believe that he does, yes. Absolutely.
On what basis do you hold that belief?
On two things, actually. Eusebius, let me just point something about the question. That there is a difference for me, and it's useful to make this distinction between knowing that God exists and showing that God exists. Knowing that God exists, I know that God exists because I've had an experience with His life-changing power, and I continue to experience His presence. Now, I understand the limitations of that in telling you that experience or convincing you that God exists, and so I employ in that case in dialogue. Reasons or arguments or evidences that not only point to your own experience, which in my thinking you've already had some beckoning from the same God, but also reasons which might appeal to your mind to consider it that way, that God exists.
Okay, let me run with that slight cop-out and ask you to give me a little bit more detail. Are you suggesting that although you know with sufficient comfort as a rational being that God exists from your point of view, that there's something about the nature of your knowledge that doesn't make it capable of being explained to a bystander?
No. So there's something about my knowing that does not make it easy in dialogue. I'm commenting on the nature of dialogue, not necessarily in the nature of how I find my belief to be rational. Let me put it this way. So, for instance, take a definition of faith as trusting in that which you have good reasons to believe is true. That definition of faith, which, by the way, I subscribe to, is the reason why I would say I am a Christian. I put my trust in the person of Jesus Christ. I'm a follower of Jesus Christ because I have good reason to believe that the Christian story is true. Now, that good reason includes and is rooted in experience but extends beyond that. But I'm saying that when I'm engaging with somebody to answer that question, I have to consider that that person has not had the same experience as I have. And so just merely parroting my experience to you, thinking that that convinces you, is not really helpful. And certainly...
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay, yeah.
That's what I'm getting at.
Ye of little faith, take a chance on us and describe to us how it came about that you believe that you have, that God exists.
Okay, so I grew up in a family that practiced ancestralism, an African traditional religion. That has its own categories of what truth is, what reality is, and so forth. An incident happened when I was young, maybe too concerned in sharing exactly what happened, but it led me to experience what I would only be able to explain as the presence of Christ himself at a very young age, and later try to understand what that mean, who he is and what that means, and then finding out that he is a historical person, that he made certain claims or certain claims were made by him and so forth, and understanding that the Bible is a credible witness about who he is. And then that prompted me to then, at the end of or during that process, to trust the message of who he is, this Christian story, or is told, explained in the, as a Christian story. I put my trust in him and continue to experience what I would describe as the presence of God in my life, the presence of God on a daily basis for guidance and so forth.
Okay. Jacques, does God exist?
I think that the odds that he does or that she does are vanishingly small, is sufficiently small that we would ordinarily call it a no. So we tend to, I treat all beliefs and all propositions in the same sort of way, right? You believe the things that you have good reasons to believe, and you disbelieve things that you don't have good reasons to believe. And God questions, metaphysical questions, aren't any different to any of those sorts of things. So the first thing I would want to ask is, which God are we talking about? So listening to a story like Machlat says, which is, of course, very compelling on an emotional and a personal level, the thing that, that listeners might want to think about is that it's a pure accident of geography that he came to Christianity, right? So that exact same narrative could be told if you're growing up in Bangladesh or somewhere else, and you might believe equally strongly in a different religion. So just like in science, where anecdotes don't trump the body of evidence, those stories, those really heartfelt and sincere stories of personal growth or personal satisfaction or whatever it might be, are anthropologically wonderfully interesting, but they don't add up to evidence. And the thing is that it's perhaps not useful. I'm going to annoy atheists today too, as well as Christians, because I think it's perhaps not useful to think about this question in terms of truth or falsity at all. I don't find the God question that interesting, to be honest. What I find interesting is what people do in as motivated by their beliefs, whether it's by their lack of belief or by their beliefs. I care more about behavior than about these beliefs. So religion becomes important or interesting when it causes people to do harm or to do good. So yeah, that's the pragmatism is more.
I agree with you. Yeah, totally right. And actually, Mashlati and I were talking about this, and undoubtedly, this is a dynamic conversation. The listeners can take it whatever direction they want to take it with us, and we want to talk about behavior and what one does with religion. We'll go there. We've got an hour, Jacques. I hear you on that. Mashlati and I were talking offline the other day, for example, about questions of ethics and the relationship between God or God not existing and morality. But the reason why the question still of existence does matter is that you know that if you and I were to offer our Christian friends the pragmatism option and say, hey, Mashlati, you know what? Your belief in God is a bit weird, metaphysically speaking. But if it makes you the lovely guy that you are, in terms that even atheists can make sense of when they look at your behavior, we'll grant you your unjustified belief. Mashlati's comeback is going to be, no, dude, I am both a decent person in my behavior, maybe even praiseworthy, and my belief is actually true. So I don't think many Christians or people of other faiths and denominations will be happy with some kind of pragmatic defense of how a belief in God fits into their behavior. So can we get back to the original question? Do you think that there are sufficient reasons to believe that God in fact exists?
I think that believers should be reluctant to go down the kind of evidentiary route here. I think that they should want to avoid that question, because in all of your other beliefs, so take aside your religious views, in all of your other beliefs, you believe things where there are good reasons to believe them and not otherwise. So if we're going to be consistent, for some reason, religion is not treated consistently with our other kinds of beliefs. When I talk to a racist or a sexist or something like that, I mean, not that this often happens.
The friends you keep.
Exactly. But when I do, you know, one of your lines of attack is to say, well, there is absolutely no evidence for your position that X is inferior to Y. And we think that that's a compelling argument against them. But for some reason, you can say to a believer, there is insufficient evidence and you believe this despite the evidence. And they say, that's okay. But we don't think that's okay in other sorts of beliefs, in our beliefs around politics.
But that's a fair point, right? You don't apply faith to other parts of your life. Why do you give God special discount when it comes to the evidential burden?
Yeah, I think that's an assertion a little bit there by Jacques, which I understand, and I certainly encounter a lot of people who view God in a different light or in a special light that you can't subject him to, or belief in God, to critical analysis, or you can't subject him to evidential investigation. I don't necessarily share that view, and this is a message I to my fellow believers, is that we should, if a belief is having, that it should be subjected to scrutiny, and not just retreat into a religious ghetto. And I think that's probably where the frustration is coming from, is where we retreat to our dogmatic positions. But it's not only, of course, believers, but it's also non-believers who do the same. And I think that the conversations like these are important to challenge that fundamentalism, where it's just about parroting again my beliefs without necessarily being engaged in dialogue and opening up my commitments and my convictions.
Okay, Mashasa, I want to get clear what you're. I want to get clear the strategy there in your response to Jacques. Are you saying, yes, Jacques, my belief in God is not based on sufficient reason, but come on, dude, you've got plenty of those in your belief set? Or are you saying, actually, Jacques, I do meet your highbrow rational standards?
I think that I do. I do. My belief can, Jacques' standards, if their standards are reasonable. I think that even though I started and led with, it is, how do I know? And I said it's rooted in experience, but even experience is grounds for rational belief. I believe I'm talking to Jacques right now, and somebody coming in will ask me if my belief is rational. The fact that I believe I'm talking to Jacques right, I'd say yes, and I'd provide evidence, but ultimately it's rooted in the experience of me actually talking to Jacques that I believe.
But here's the difference, right? And here's the nub of the issue. When we go back, and sorry to play Dr. Phil on you, when we go back to your childhood, you've had a once-off experience early in your childhood. It was never repeated again, never observed again. You've got imperfect and increasingly fading memories about it. That is your sole piece of evidence, subjectively, for why your belief in God is justified. Jacques and I, as atheists and agnostics, can't have a look at it. We can't reproduce your childhood experience. That is very different to the level of evidence involved in knowing whether, for example, ARVs are a good thing to take if you've been diagnosed with HIV. So in that sense, you do not, in your belief in God, have the kind of experience that matches what has become the gold standard of evidence-based reasoning.
No. Okay, so let me say two things about that. You're incorrect in saying that it's a once-off experience that's never been repeated necessarily. My experience with the person of God is a continuous experience. I just referred back to that moment because this was a switch that I made. Okay. This is where I made a switch. That's why I referred back to it. But it's a continuous, and this is where the relationship between faith and reason, and that's why I also gave that definition, I find helpful. Because if, by placing my trust in the little that I had to believe is true, in a sense, if you like, going through the door, what I found on the other side of the door then gave me more reasons to believe that what I had done, what I had trust was a good thing. And then because of those reasons, then my trust grows. So this is what Christians, for instance, would mean by growing in trust in a relationship, is because trust feeds reason and reason feeds trust in that sense. And so faith grows. But coming to the second point that you made, I think that there are different categories here when we speak about evidence, and I grant that. And I think that it's an important nuance to make, to say that there are certain things, for instance, within the scientific realm that we subject using scientific methodologies to investigate certain queries that we are concerned with, mostly temporal, mostly in the material, not immaterial. And so how we go about investigating claims about immaterial things is quite different in that sense. But in that sense, it still does not mean that because we've moved from the realm of the material to the immaterial, then we are now no longer in the realm of evidence. And I think philosophers would want to very much, and especially philosophers of science, would very much want to agree with me on that.
Let's take a quick break there, guys. It's 22 minutes after 10. If you've just joined the conversation, we're asking the question, does God exist? Our lines are going crazy. And we'll take a couple of calls after this. Let me look at who's calling in. I'm not sure if the man upstairs is going to call in, but maybe he will and reveal himself. Okay, a couple of people joining me is Mashlatu Mashau, who's director of Rabbi Zacharias International Ministries Trust SA. And I've also got Jacques, who teaches critical thinking and, of course, is well known for his public writings on a range of issues in the country. And he's in our Cape Town studio. They also happen to be a believer and an atheist, respectively. We've got so many calls, guys. Let's take a bunch of them, and then I'll give you a chance to respond to whichever ones you'd like to. It's going to be fairly random, because I can't pick. There's just really too many folks wanting to have a bite at the God cherry. Jan, good morning.
Good morning, Eusebius. Take religion out of the equation. If you look at the universe, then it speaks for itself that there is a God, that there is a creator. Nothing could have come into existence without a beginning.
Why do you say that, Jan?
Einstein, I think his relativity theory, E is mc squared. Energy became mass times the speed of light squared. So where did the energy come from? That original energy that became the universe and that exploded and that created the Big Bang. Because it couldn't have just come from nowhere.
Okay, but I hear you on your reasoning. I'm just puzzled. We want to understand what happened at the point at which the Big Bang happened. Why does it mean God exists? Maybe a little green monster was responsible?
No, it's God. God, God doesn't have, is not bound to time. Time is just a current dimension that we have, a beginning and an end. God existed before time, and he decided in his wisdom that he is going to create the universe.
Okay, who told you that, Jan?
No, science tells you that.
Science? Which scientist has said that?
The science that nothing can come from nothing.
Okay, interesting. Okay, interesting take. Let's go to Morningside. Rick, welcome to this debate.
Morning, Eusebius.
Yes, sir.
My
Do you believe God
very
exists?
Simple one. No. My point is very simple.
Mm-hmm.
If there was a God, there would be only one religion. The evidence would be overwhelming. The fact is that we have thousands of religions with tens of thousands of sects all disagreeing on the nature and existence of God.
Okay. Is that your basis for not believing God exists?
Yes.
I'm not sure if that's a very good basis, but pardon me, I'm not trying to be rude. Surely it's possible that if God existed, that there could be many false gods, false prophets, people doing bad things in the name of the one and only God.
Why would a good God allow it?
Maybe God is not good. Maybe the Christian God is not the real God.
Well, that's entirely possible. It's probable that they're all false gods.
I hear you. Like you, I'm closer to atheism than theism. But it does seem to me that if we want to make sense of many denominations, many religions, bad things done in the name of God, I'm not sure whether that disproves God's existence. We may have to let go of the fantasy of God being all-knowing, all-loving, and all-powerful. Maybe the attributes that some denominations ascribe to God are just the wrong ones. Let's go to Woodmead. Nhlamulo, good morning and welcome to this conversation.
Good morning, Eusebius.
Are you well?
I'm well. Eusebius, if God exists, so does Santa Claus. You have to agree there.
Talk us through that logic.
Because exceptional claims, Eusebius, demand exceptional evidence. And from what we hear now from the believers, the only evidence that we have is just look around you. Jan said because of the universe,
yeah,
therefore there is God. I mean, that's not exceptional claim. I mean, that's not exceptional evidence.
But if you look at Jacob Zuma, surely you know God exists.
Well, that's another story, Eusebius, because now I hear my class what he's saying there. But whatever that can be accepted without proof,
yes,
can equally be dismissed without proof. Until Mashazi and the fellow believers bring us tangible proof, then we'll be able to take it from there.
Okay, well, that's a lekker question. If God exists, surely so does Santa Claus. Mashazi, you're going to have a minute to think that one over. In the meantime,
Eusebius is on Twitter, at Eusebius.
25 minutes before 11, we're asking the question, does God exist? Give us a call. What is your basis for believing the answer is yes or no? 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. We've still got Jacques Rousseau with us in our Cape Talk studios. Mashlatse, we've just lost him there. We'll get him back in a second. I'm not sure what happened to Mashlatse's line. But you know, the man upstairs sometimes works in a mysterious way. We'll get him back in a second. I thought he was running away from that question that we had from Ntlamulo. The very last question Mashlatse said to you was, surely if God exists, so too does Santa Claus. What do you say to someone who gives you that counterexample to your evidential standard?
Right. So thanks for that. Actually, now I think we're getting to the heart of it, because I would have Jan and Sumela in the same room. Because if I understand, and I sympathize with Jan, even though I think he struggled to articulate maybe his position. What Jan led with was the question that a lot of thinkers have wrestled with: why is there something rather than nothing? And I think if I'm getting him from looking at the Big Bang, which, you know, talks about the history of the universe. You rewind the clock, it gets to a particular point in time where the universe is really a mathematical point. It comes into existence, time and matter come into existence at this point, and so forth and so forth. And maybe an argument in the sense that I would be talking about maybe with Jan is something called a Kalam cosmological argument, which is simply stated, you know, whatever begins to exist, like the universe or like the Big Bang seems to suggest, has a cause, and that the universe began to exist, if you accept that model of the Big Bang, and therefore the universe, since it began to exist, therefore it has a cause. It's something that, you know, philosophers have time analyzing and thinking about then what kind of a cause could bring a material universe, which is consists of matter, can bring time. And so obviously then you do a philosophical dance. It's timeless, it's uncaused itself, it's immaterial and so forth, something that Jacques would appreciate in critical thinking, I think. But then that brings Sumela's point into bear as well, that exceptional claims demand exceptional proofs. That's what he said. And he said maybe this is what we mean by God exists in a sense. We mean, you know, like Santa Claus, and unless you provide the exceptional proof. And I think that could be maybe one example is that unlike Santa Claus, and maybe Santa Claus, we've got an explanation for Santa Claus, how Santa Claus came about, which makes it rational for people today to believe in the existence of Santa Claus. But when it comes to the existence of God, I think we've got much more evidence to bear with, much more facts that we need to treat more seriously than Santa Claus. For instance, the historical minimalist facts of the resurrection of Jesus Christ would be something that people would point to and say, look, we need to explain those, and that significantly elevates what we're talking about beyond the level of Santa Claus, that there was a historical person, that he had some form of following, that people believed he had a healing ministry, that people believed that he died, and that they believed that post his death, that some of them believed that they saw him and so forth. And I think that those are facts that need explanation. Of course, there are that alternative ways to explain that, but I don't think that's the same.
Okay, Jacques, do you agree with that?
Well, I sympathise with a lot of what Mahlatse said there, but I do think that there's a special pleading going on, which is often the case in these kinds of conversations, because the facts and the evidence we're talking about is not historically verified in very many places outside of religious texts, right? So most of the evidence is circular. It's from the very thing that you're trying to demonstrate is true. You're using evidence from within that tradition. So we do have snippets of information or evidence for things like some of the historical events captured in the Bible, but the answer to say therefore this is all true and therefore there is a God is only credible thanks to our confirmation bias. This is only credible because we already have this background narrative that we can plug those things into. If you just got those raw facts and didn't have that narrative, you'd never be inclined to believe in all of the stuff that you're supposed to believe with religion. And then lastly, even if these things were true, even if these people exist and even if God existed or exists. I mean, we forget often about that as well with this cosmological argument. Maybe God did exist and then expended her energy creating the universe that is now dead. Or maybe she's an absentee landlord who just doesn't care about our lives, etc. And my point is simply that none of this justifies religion and religious belief. The God question is a separate question. So even if you resolve the God question, you've still got to tell me why I should care about God's existence.
Okay, so here's a question from Sean. Sean wants to know from you, Jacques, what kind of evidence would convince you that God exists?
I think that's something that's omniscient and omnipotent and so forth could just give me some skywriting or something.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, Jacques, I'm here, I'm real, or whatever it might be, you know? It should be really
But here's why the question is serious, though, because within the realm of evidence-based reasoning that you are accustomed to in making sense of what is real, what is not real, you will probably be able to find simple inferences consistent with your existing beliefs why you should not take seriously certain kinds of experiences of the sort that Mahlatse continuously had going back all the way to his childhood. For example, you might think that you were just mistaken, having an hallucination, and all the other things that you're familiar with from philosophy of religion. So it is a very serious question from Sean, who I think is an atheist himself and a philosopher. And so the question is, is there anything that could convince you that God exists?
I imagine that there is. I can't imagine what it would be at this point because, as you say, there's usually going to be a simpler explanation, right? And there's usually going to be some way to explain it. And we know about our frailties as humans. We know that we're prone to these fabrications. We're prone to confirmation bias. We're prone to liking narratives more than scientific facts, etc. And we also know, as a previous caller pointed out, that there are all these religious traditions all through the centuries. Christianity is one of the youngest of those things. And so all of these things would incline me to say that, yes, I was probably making a mistake, but I certainly can comprehend being thoroughly doubtful or confused or whatever it might be. Mm. But to go the second step and say something that would prove to me that God exists, I think that would require even something more impressive in a sense.
But you are genuinely open to believing the proposition God exists.
I'd like to believe I am, of course, that we can only tell once I'm exposed to that challenge. I certainly would like to believe that I am.
But let me ask you the opposite. What kind of evidence would persuade you that your ongoing or current belief that God exists was a mistaken belief all along? Could anything persuade you?
Yes, I think that if, for instance, the resurrection was, say, proven to be, or there was evidence that it was a hoax, that somehow the other alternative or competing explanations are, in fact, more plausible than the actual resurrection, the idea that Jesus actually did rise from the dead. I think historically, not only would Christianity itself crumble, but I would as well in terms of my belief. I would give up that because it is a center of my beliefs. But I do want to say something.
But that should surely mean that you're on the threshold of atheism, because surely that is already the existing scenario. I mean, let's actually go there. The resurrection.
Yeah.
On what basis do you believe that it's not nonsense?
Eusebius, can I go back to just a little point there? I think that in the conversation...
Yeah, as long as you come back to telling me the evidence why the resurrection is plausible.
Of course. Of course, I will. But I just wanted to say something about what proof, because I think that we've been using the word proof and evidence and from our callers interchangeably, and also introduced arguments that were meant to say, look, it can't. This is how we maybe demonstrate. Mm. But we never clarified exactly what it is that we're demonstrating. So I don't want people to think that what we're saying is we've got arguments or we've got proof. That when anybody who understands them listens to them, then definitely they will be convinced that God exists. No, it's not evidence. That's not what I mean by evidence. I mean evidence in a sense that this is compelling, firstly, to make the point that belief in God is not irrational, that it is rational. As far as our standards and some of what Jacques has said as a standard for a test for rationality applies. But secondly, its aim is to, again, in dialogue, to try and compel different people to at least take a closer look at the Christian truth claims themselves, and to take them seriously. That's all that is. And again, different people will find it more compelling or less compelling based on how not only they understand them, but based on their experiences and so forth. So that's, I just wanted to be clear on that.
No, I'm happy to accept that qualification, yeah. Mashlasi. But okay. If I can push you here, you know, in the spirit of our friendship, I'm not sure whether that helps you out, because whether you want to separate an epistemological question around the reasonableness of your belief from the hard evidence question, a metaphysical question, the two eventually will collapse in conversation, even if we get rid of the philosophical language and speak plainly. Because the reasonableness of your belief that God exists, if it hinges, for example, on a central tenet, such as the resurrection, then I come back to my question from 3 minutes ago. Why do you believe that God rose from the dead? That's a weird thing to believe.
Yes, well, look, we can explore the evidence in this way that, like I said, and I think this is something that Jacques picked up on. And I disagree, by the way. The evidence that we're talking about, historical evidence, as historians approach the event, the historicity of Jesus Christ, is not only biblical, but you've got extra-biblical sources as well that make it. And then what you have is you've got a convergence of these lines of evidence that then make it very reasonable, and there's a very good consensus even between people who, or amongst people who believe and those who don't believe that God exists, about certain facts as pertaining to the historicity of Jesus Christ. Things like there was a man who was born in the first century, so forth, in the Jewish community, and this is the kind of life that he lived. They disagree on the interpretation, whether he actually healed people or people believe that he did, but certainly had a following based on that and so forth. And so when we come to the resurrection, it's exactly that, is that it is accepted that post his death, that a group of believers believed that they saw him after he had risen from the dead, and they believed that he was the risen Jesus Christ. And it is on the basis of that belief that the church grew, the Christian faith grew.
But Mashlasi, isn't there something fatally circular in your reasoning? When you use the phrase, it is accepted, is that not shorthand for saying it is accepted by those who already think that faith is a rational process of forming belief, that indeed the resurrection happened, even if it may not square with modern science?
No. So let me give you an example. Bart Ehrman is a critic, and he's not somebody who believes that Jesus actually rose from the dead. However, he would say that he would say that it from his investigations, he believes that the people who believed there were people who believed that he rose from the dead. That's all I'm getting at there. So So it's not circular at all. I'm just saying that the minimalist fact is that there are people who believed that he rose from the dead, and they built it on that. Now, to move and separate it further from the claim of circular reasoning, I'm saying now that there are theories that we need to employ to be able to then explain why it is that these people claimed that they saw him.
Okay.
Now, what could basically explain that? And now, like you said, I think you started to do that with my story when you spoke about hallucinations and so forth. So in this case, we could say, well, maybe that he was resuscitated, that he wouldn't actually die. Jesus didn't actually die, but then there was a trick that was played, or actually the Romans thought they killed him. Or, you know, as some of my Muslim friends maybe might say, that actually at the last moment before they killed him, God took him away. So they thought they were killing him, but actually they weren't killing him, or that the disciples were hallucinating, or that they stole his body, or this is just a church legend, and so forth and so forth. And so when one takes these alternative theories that explain, and of course amongst them is that maybe he actually did rise from the dead, and we start to actually investigate them, then I believe that what you have is that you've got the fact that he rose from the dead, or at least that theory that he rose from the dead, it comes out tops in terms of its explanatory power. And I find that it's at least reason enough to compel someone who's asking the question about the resurrection. At least take a closer look. That's all it's saying. Take a closer look and consider the Christian story more seriously.
Okay, let's take a quick break there. We'll try and squeeze in as many calls as we can. My goodness, we could have had 2 hours of this. It's only 1 hour, but I'll take as many of your views right after this.
Eusebius Mackayser on 702 and Cape Talk.
Luke Hackney tweets, Eusebius, if morals come from God, then we are all in trouble. God is the most immoral being in the Bible. Daylight Sitole tweets, God exists. It just depends on which one people want to believe. To me, the universe, Eusebius, is in fact God. Someone else said, Eusebius, you've really hit rock bottom. Why are you even talking about this topic? Yes, because on this show, dude, everything is up for grabs. If you don't like it, you know, you can listen to a music station. We ask critical questions here. If you're scared of interrogating your faith, I suggest you take heart in people like Mashlatsi, who care to be able to make sense of their own beliefs. And that's exactly what we do here, unapologetically. Mtoko says, what is so disorganized about our existence, Eusebius? We have everything we need to live here, or do we not? And so it goes on. I can't keep up. In fact, hashtag God debate is trending quite high nationally. If you've missed most of this debate and you've just tuned in, we will podcast it. We've got about 5 minutes left. In addition to that, you can go on social media and see what has been archived under the hashtag God debate. Jacques, in 30 seconds, because I really want to take one last round of calls, a couple of people are saying, I'm giving you an easy time insofar as Mashlatse has the burden of proof that God exists. Do you think that you have a burden to prove that God does not exist in a dialogue about God's existence?
No, I don't think that I do. I think that the null hypothesis, the kind of most reasonable thing to think a priori, is that God does not exist and that the burden of proof is on the believer. Can I just quickly correct something that's gone out on Twitter? I don't say that there are no other historical sources. I said that there were few of them, so just to correct that. I am aware that Jesus is spoken about, but particularly in Josephus and Tacitus's work. But just to correct that.
Okay.
Sorry.
Linda and Benoni, go ahead. Hello, Linda.
Oh, hi. Hi, Eusebius. Okay, first, I'd like to say you cannot subject God to a clinical trial that will give you the kind of evidence you're looking for, because he owes no man, he owes no one any burden of proof.
That's true. I totally agree. Says, sorry. Neither does Santa Claus.
He is neither does Santa Claus, for that matter. He says he is who he is, regardless of what anyone thinks or says. So, unfortunately, we can't do that clinical trial. But let's look at things logically. Do you think that, do you actually believe that any form of intelligent order happens by happenstance, just by chance? Or that, you know, things, you know, normal things come out of nothingness, out of nothing at all? So far, we haven't seen any of that happen.
Oh, that's a very good question. We'll have to leave it for the second installment of the God debate, whether the question, why is there something rather than nothing, is best answered by chance, mystery, I don't know, agnosticism, continue with research project, or hypothesize a God. Which is the right one? Jan started us off with that one. Mishlatsi had a bite at it as well. But actually, I'm not so sure whether there's only one answer to it. Ike, go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. You see this great show. I'm sitting on the phone, so hopefully I can get answers today. The first question I have is, who controls the heartbeat?
Yeah.
And then the second question is, in a scenario, you have two gentlemen, one with short hair, one with long hair. If you look at the short hair person, you would know that a barber exists. If you look at the one with the long, untidy hair, you will think that a barber doesn't exist. So in terms of that, some are saying, does God exist? So you look at the gentleman with the long hair, and you say that the barber doesn't exist. You look at the gentleman with the neat cut, then you know that the barber exists. Okay. So from your panel, can you just give us a feedback so at least we know where we stand.
Okay, thank you, David Hume. Tulani?
Hi, Eusebius.
You got 30 seconds.
Yeah, sorry, man. Look, I know that's not enough time, but I think what we faltered in this debate, because I've been listening for a while, is we've limited God to the Christian God. It sounds to me that the focus has been on the Christian God, but if you understand, God is not just limited to the Christian God. So I think my comments would be more valid on the second round of this debate, maybe next year or whenever we have more time, because my argument was based on a God that is bigger than just the Christian God, but it sounds like it's the Christian God that you've been focusing on today.
We didn't specify. We meant to have a discussion about a deity, whether it's the God with bells and whistles, whether it is a God that is gender non-conforming, whether it's a little monster below your bed that you call God, doesn't matter to us. So it wasn't meant to be the Christian God. That is just a ubiquitous one in our discussion. I'm going to give you 20 seconds each, Mashlatsi, starting with you, to sum up.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Eusebius, and thank you to you, Jacques. I really wish we could have had a bit more discussion on this, but I think the important thing was to demonstrate that we can have a good conversation that is critical around this issue, and that we need to be having those a little bit more in our society from both sides. I think that the uncritical nature will continue to foster tensions, not only about religion, about the application on other things like race and justice and so forth. But thank you so much.
We'll have another version.
Respect you. Yeah,
Mashlatsi, you've been great as always. And we'll have another version. We'll have a more precise, different question next time. Maybe the relationship between God and morality. Jacques, your final say, 20 seconds.
Thank you. I guess I endorse what Mishlatsi said there entirely. And I do also want to say that I think a lot of atheists are not nearly thoughtful enough about these things. And my final thought would be that people should just think about and remember that a mystery or set of mysteries doesn't license you to plug in any answer you like. And the final word I'll give to Wittgenstein, which people can replay and listen and think about: a nothing will do as well as a something about which nothing can be said.
Gorgeous. Thanks so much.